The startup game has changed, and only the most agile will make it to the other side. I'm your host, Michael Martocci, founder and CEO of SwagUp, and this is Out of the Woods, a show where we interview top startup founders, executives, and investors to hear how they're navigating the rapidly changing economic environment. We'll share real-time insights, strategies, and stories from those in the trenches with the goal to help as many teams level up their execution and make it out of the woods. So with that in mind, let's dive in. Awesome. So welcome back to the Out of the Woods podcast. I don't know what episode number this is. I think we're at like 12 or 13. And I feel like at least half of the people on here have been from Miami. And probably more than half of those people are not actually from Miami. They're recent transplants. But super excited to have Lee Rubin on here from Confetti. I think we first met maybe 2-3 months ago. We're, you know, our businesses are in somewhat similar spaces, you know, especially around like the employee engagement and HR side. We tackle very different problems, but have, you know, very similar kind of buyers and solve similar needs in a way. But excited to dive into the conversation and have you on.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to chat and hopefully, yeah, make a good podcast for everyone who's listening.
By the way, first female guest, and I'm pretty ashamed of that, but it's like harder to find female guests for some reason. I don't know what
it is. Okay. First of all, now that I feel honored that I'm the first, but I can introduce you to a whole bunch of female entrepreneurs. I think, you know, I talk a lot about like there's progress, and progress isn't just like this, you know, 50-50 scenario. It's evolving. So,
there's something like, I don't know, like guys just like to like message each other. They're like DM each other. It's just like this much more kind of casual kind of interaction. And, you know, when it's like a female and male together, like sometimes it's just harder in a business sense to like have a fluid, natural conversation. I don't know why, but hopefully we can get some more women on here. So you let me know if you have some people that would be interesting. Awesome. But so first off, Miami, what do you think of Miami? What's your thoughts over the last, how long have you been here again?
So I grew up in Florida, in Boca, and then went to University of Florida, moved to New York, moved to Israel, moved back to New York, moved to Florida, moved back to New York, and now I'm back in Miami.
Do you ever sit still?
It doesn't feel that way, because I've definitely moved a lot in my life, and I pretty much changed apartments every year since I was 18. So like I definitely feel like I haven't just had, like, I'm really looking forward to having like a house that I can just settle down in. But I feel like you can't complain about Miami. There's of course some questions, maybe some political questions or some other things that, you know, get worried about in Florida, but putting that aside, there's a really great community of founders that have moved here. A lot of them ex New York, And weather is great. The taxes are great. And what else? What else do you want? What else?
Is this like the place to settle for you at this point, or?
Yeah. So me and my significant other, both of us are lucky to have both of our parents in Florida. So we're it's a big deal. Like, you know, we don't have kids or anything, but like when you have kids, you're like, you need that extra help. And to have both of our parents be so close to us, we're like, maybe we shouldn't make any kind of crazy moves and leave. But both of us are still very curious about leaving and either doing like a West Coast stint or moving back to New York for a few years. So we haven't totally taken it off the table, but we're definitely here for now and we're happy here.
Yeah, we lived in LA for a little bit, like Redondo Beach. And I love it out there. I love the West Coast. But we had zero family, you know, there was no, you know, you 6-hour flight just to like, you know, spend the holidays with people and stuff. And knowing like one day we'd want to have kids, I think it was just like very challenging to see ourselves kind of staying there. And we're just constantly on flights across the country over and over again. So, you know, we have a 3-month-old and Helen's mom like lives with us part time now and takes care of the baby throughout the day and stuff. And there's so much value in that. You know, it's hard to compete with family being right around the corner. But I love it here as well. And then you spent some time growing up in Israel, or were you born there? Or were you born in the States?
I was born in Israel. I moved to the US when I was 4. And then I moved back to Israel, always in the spirit of just finding a technical co-founder. But once I did, he was like, go raise us some money. And so I moved back to New York. But Israel is very much a core part, I think, of my identity that runs deep.
If you grow up there, like if you're born there, does that make you like eligible for the army and all that kind of stuff? Like you basically are kind of, you know, have to do that eventually.
Yeah. So there's certain rules, but at large, once you're born there, you kind of have some form of an obligation, but at a certain like amount of years after you leave the country, you just basically need to get like signed out. So there needs to be like a process where you tell the army, I'm not actually going to go serve. In my case, not only that, but you have certain exemptions, like celebrities can have exemptions, or people who play professional sports can have exemptions. So you usually say like, hey, you know, I got a full scholarship to University of Florida. I'm going to pursue my academic studies, so I'm not going to go to the army. But I think it's easier once you don't live there for a very, very long time. So,
yeah.
But if you do live there, you definitely have to go. There's no way around that.
Do you think like the military aspect of the country leads to like this, like 100%. More, you know, operationally minded people that have higher standards and expectations? Like, 'cause it feels like almost militant in a way, the way that some of these companies are run. They're very organized, very process driven.
Totally. I think that the military helps a lot. And in many ways, the way that they help is through the experimentation of R&D. So a lot of my friends that are Israeli who built their own startups, the startup that they ended up building is a continuation from the things that they learned in the army, especially in cybersecurity, anything that's like, you know, machinery or AI. They learned those things in the army, and then they found similar real world applications outside of the army to take that. And it's a very unique skill set. And like Israel is constantly at war, so we're one of the countries that's like has experience. Like most countries haven't been at war in a very long time, so it's different to in practice and then versus reality. And when you're constantly in that reality, you have to be very strong at what it is that you're doing. And I think the combination between the resiliency and the never-ending like battles brings the Israeli people to just kind of always need to have their A game, because it's a survival mechanism. The military does a really good job in breeding exceptionally talented people. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. We have a few military veterans on our team. Like our chief supply chain officer is an ex-Marine. And he just brings a great empathetic leadership style, super organized and disciplined. And I've learned a lot just kind of like observing him operate in a way that's different than the way that I kind of like loosely operate off of feel sometimes. So then, you know, confetti, it seems like the timing was pretty perfect in the sense that, you know, you kind of got the business off the ground in 2017 and start to hit an inflection point at a time when the world went fully remote. Was that kind of by chance, or did you see that kind of coming leading up to it? What was kind of the story in the beginning?
No, we definitely didn't see this coming. I think that would be very special for us. We started Confetti for the in-person world. That's what we raised our seed round on. So we helped companies bring their employees together, but face-to-face. So a lot of parties that happen in the office or a venue of their choice. We did the Caviar DoorDash acquisition party. We would do like Riskified when they were 400 employees, when Datadog was super small. We like did the haircuts in the office and their happy hours. Like it really, really ranged all the benefits and perks. And when COVID hit, it was a surprise to us. Many people were like, whoa, Lee, we're so sorry that the company that you worked so hard to build is, you know, literally evaporated within a day. But we were really, I like when I look back, we were so resilient. We were so, we didn't even take a moment to feel like pity or sadness for ourselves. Like there was like one day where we were like, okay, let's just let this like sink in for a second, but tomorrow we're going to come to the office and we're going to start you know, bringing solutions to the table. And a story that I really like to share is the last invoice that we got for an in-person event and the first invoice that we got for a virtual event. The span between those were 10 days, which is really a testament to how fast we were able to pivot. And once we got that first booking, we just never looked back. We just were like, if there's one, there's two. And if there's two, there's three. And now, you know, fast forward, we've done over 16,000 events on the platform. We have over 5,000 customers, and it's been a really beautiful journey.
Had you have done any of like these remote events leading up to, you know, the pandemic? Was that something you had trialed out at all?
No. No, not at all.
So it makes the 10 days even more impressive.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. What we did, if you want to know, we had this concept called like a ghost experience. So at first I just wanted to see if anyone was interested in buying these events. So I put on our website like virtual trivia, virtual Jeopardy, and then, you know, literally people just started paying for them. And then we started creating them. So we did a very kind of unique approach by first seeing like, does anyone want this? And the only way to really know if someone wants something is if they give you a dollar, at least in my opinion. That was that.
Before, I have plenty more questions, but I guess just to take a step back, what is Confetti? Like, what's the easiest way to describe it? Why do people use you all?
So I think in the most, like, there's the kind of the shallow response, and then there's like the deeper response. The shallow response is that companies use us to really simply put together their virtual experiences. So many folks have compared us to the Amazon of virtual experiences. Some people have called us the Netflix of experiences or events. Some people have called us the corporate Disney World. So I like all those different analogies of
almost like Peloton too, because Peloton's more live entertainment, yeah. You know?
Especially because they create their own content, which we do too. So I definitely see Peloton. I see Netflix. I think the deeper thing that came from the vision, but we really start seeing this happen in the spirit of these events and the fact that we take the quality of these experiences so seriously, is the vision behind Confetti is really that the connectivity piece of work that we feel like is missing in today's world, where people essentially engage in a job and it's become this like kind of sad story where no one likes their job. No one likes their colleagues. Everyone hates Mondays and looks forward to Fridays. And then you like look back and you're like, holy crap, this is like the biggest portion of my waking hours. So like besides the time that I'm sleeping, like when I'm awake, like Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, this is where my time is going. And if you're doing it with a job that you don't like and people that you don't like, it's like a really sad way of living. And I think that's the story that we're really trying to change in this world. And we hope that I was talking to another founder yesterday. I was like, Confetti is not going to fix, you know, a crappy culture. Crappy culture is like a whole other story. You know, you have toxic managers and whatever, but what it can do is it can create empathy by having these experiences, by having a laughter, by going on Zoom and doing a cooking class, and then you see other people's kids or wives or husbands or whatever. And then those are the people that you're like, oh, you know, Greg, your manager, he's not a jerk. He's a father with two kids and his kids are actually hilarious. And, you know, next time when you're in a meeting with Greg, you're going to be like, okay, you know, you're human. You're human just like me. We've got our ups, we've got our downs, we've got everything in between. Let's like work through our indifferences and try to build something great.
It's like, if you think about like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, the people that you work with are like your circle. Those are the people you see every day, 50, 60% of your time. It's the people you like, your kids go play soccer together on the weekends and you go out to Central Park or whatever. Like, it's just your coworkers become your life. But that's not necessarily the case anymore, you know, for better or worse, potentially. But when you're in this remote environment, you're like, your life is like that computer, but then you turn it off and then you go back to like other things, and you don't have that like support system. You can't vent with those people after work and like go grab a drink, and just these little kind of social cues that bring you closer and closer together. And it makes work just very sterile. It's like very much about the task at hand. And then, like you said, when things become annoying or, you know, they get hard, people kind of maybe even quit because they're just like, I don't care enough about this company. I don't care enough about these people to really deal with this stuff. So let me just move on. And there's a lot of this attrition that's happening at companies. People stay for 9 months, they stay for, you know, 12 months, and they kind of just move on. Whereas, you know, if you feel like you're truly part of a team, like if you were on a basketball team, you wouldn't quit after 8 months because it's hard. Like you feel an indebtedness to each other, like you're on this journey together. And I think anything that, you know, you guys can do to help build that sense of connection is really impactful for our company. It's not just the, hey, let's like watch a magic show. It's like, how can we bring this team together in a way that's going to feel like, hey, we're on this shared journey together.
Totally. I recently posted on LinkedIn, this post by Shahil Bloom, and he created some really cool data around the people that we spend our time with over the course of our lives. And it's like six different graphs. And the TLDR of these graphs is like, your time with your kids are really limited. You spend a lot of time with them when they're babies, when they're young. And then, you know, pretty much once they're 18, they leave the house and you start to spend less and less time with them. And you really need to take that time with them seriously. Like I really think to myself, if you have like grandparents that are still alive, like where do they live? How often do you get to see them? How old are they? And then you start to think, wow, I have five more times that I'm going to see my grandparents if they're going to reach the average life expectancy of, you know, 80. And that's like a really crazy thought to think. And on the other side, you have coworkers, where your coworkers are some of the people that you're going to spend the most amount of time with in your life. And we're like afraid to get into arguments with them. It's like, we're totally okay with getting into arguments with our significant other. And it's like obvious that those arguments like deepen our relationships, and they're part of the experience of having a deep relationship with our friends, with our families, with our significant others. And then all of a sudden the rules completely change once you're in a workplace, even though you're spending more time often with your colleagues than you do your significant other even.
Do you think remote work is a net positive or a net negative?
I think ultimately remote work is a net positive. I think that you really need to learn and know how to manage your team remotely. And if you don't know how to do that, I can see a world where remote work for those people, for those managers, for those employees is a net negative. For our team, we have that skill set where we know how to manage a team remotely. And we can give our employees the luxury of working from home or from a local coffee shop or office of choice. But then they can still balance the other things that they like within their life, like not having to commute or cooking in their own kitchen because they have their own dietary restrictions or certain disabilities that make it more comfortable for them to work in their home instead of in an office. And I really pride myself on that.
Yeah. There was a lot of these types of businesses that kind of came up, you know, over the last couple of years, and of like varying quality levels. Like there's some people that are just like, you know, they're a personal trainer in their house and they're like, let me do some Zoom classes or something. And then you have like the local magician that does magic shows for people or something. And then you have people like yourselves and your company that kind of more institutionalized it and brought it to a whole nother like quality level. Like what allowed you all to stand out and acquire a ton of customers, do 16,000 events? Like you talk about the quality of the content and, you know, in-housing all the content. Like why was that an important decision, and how do you go about doing that?
Yeah. I think it really is for us, it's one of our core values of wanting to have really quality experiences. It's the lifeblood of the team that I've acquired, and everyone in the company is super aligned that we want to make these experiences the best that we can. And we're constantly reviewing what went wrong and how do we make it better? What's okay that could be better than that? And what's amazing that could be even better than that? Like, we're constantly pushing the boundaries of what does great look like. And I think that what happens with most other companies and marketplaces, especially ones that are venture-backed, is most marketplaces don't want the responsibility of quality, right? Because you're like, hey, that's a lot of work. I just want to process your money. Like, I don't want to have to be responsible for whether you enjoy yourself. Like, that's something so subjective. It's something so difficult to achieve. So I'm going to create an open marketplace where I let any vendor in the world sign up for my platform. And if you don't like it, just give them a bad review. But what I found is like, that's such a like a waste. It's such a shame of like an opportunity, because people are coming to that marketplace and they're really hoping to get a really great experience. And those vendors are just, you know, one often like a pretty small company, and we're a venture-backed company. So we can really take whatever it is that they're doing, amplify it, bring like the world's most expert mixologists. We can bring the world's best magicians and take these small vendors and elevate them by really curating the curriculums, really curating the quality of the content that's on our marketplace. And most companies, they've shied away from that in the spirit of just saying, hey, I'm trying to reach a certain level of scale and I don't want to deal with the logistics and the headache. But we took a very different approach. We said we want to be in the hard part of these events, because we really, truly want to make these events as great as possible. We're not always going to hit a home run, but fortunately, you know, we have an NPS of 81 that's considered world class, and we feel like we're in the right direction. And now with extra capital, we'll be able to do even more.
So does the team and structure look more like a production company than a technology company? Are these a lot of in-house kind of people that are building out these, you know, programs and content? Or is it more, hey, we find really great partners and we kind of work in a quasi, you know, in-house method where we help kind of produce this, but they're also there. Is it different each time?
Yeah, it's pretty unique. I do like to use Netflix to some extent as an example, because Netflix has Netflix Originals, where they're like, in this way, we're going to bring all of the content in-house. But actually, behind the scenes, from what I understand of Netflix Originals, sometimes what they do is they'll get a provider or like a production team, or, you know, a film or show. And then they'll say, hey, we filmed this thing. We want to sell it to you. And yep. Then Netflix might have not been part of the production that's a small production company was, but then they sold it. And then you have third party content. So our vision is kind of similar. Some experiences we bring completely in-house, anything that's primarily using the technology to fully facilitate the game. We use our R&D team. It's our intellectual property. We use our game developers to produce that content from end to end. And then we have a second bucket, and we're going to do more and more of this in 2023. But for example, with our mixology experiences, the vision of our kind of third-party content is that we take forum of the best mixologists, we put them in a room, they get paid as a consultant, and we essentially say, we want to build the best mixology class in the world. We want to take the brains from all five of you. And what does that look like? What's the best playlist to have? What's the best recipes to have? What are the best trivia questions to be shared? What are the frequently asked questions that they should be prepared with? Like, all of the things that make a great event, we curate the curriculum for that. And then we bring on other mixologists and say, hey, you know, you might have a really great event that you host, but this is our curriculum. It's tried, true, tested. It has an NPS score of 9 and above. It's foolproof. Everyone loves it. And then we just make sure that they study our curriculum and execute on it.
How important do you think like the quality of this is to get the outcome that companies are looking for, like that sense of connection, building the culture, you know, bringing people together? Do you think the quality is a big, you know, component of that?
100%. I think because when you have a really good quality experience, you are able to shed some of the barriers that having a crappy culture can, it can kind of peel away some of that, because as I said, you'll see people that can like laugh and smile. So if you've never seen your manager laugh or smile before, and all of a sudden you see them laugh and smile because they're doing some funny experience, you're going to be like, oh wow, they're capable of showing something else.
They have emotion.
They have emotions.
They're a person.
Yeah. And if they're, you know, with their kids or they're dancing on Zoom or whatever it is, like there's a multitude of different ways, but a quality experience, that manager the next day, if that employee did something wrong, but you were on the same team and like you did this fun experience together, and that employee the next day dropped the ball on something, it's going to be harder for that manager to yell at that employee, because they're going to be like, we were teammates yesterday and we had a really great time. So, hey, here's the mistake. We're still going to confront it, but let's not do that again. You know, let's figure out a better path. And it's going to feel healthier. And the more that you do that, the more you kind of start chipping away and start realizing, oh, wow, these people that I work with, they're humans. They're just like me. They were complex. We have our own traumas, our own parental upbringings, our own workplace. You know, if you had a traumatic workplace boss, like people bring that to their next job, and it shapes them, it molds them. And we have to be more aware and sensitive to that.
Yep. And I've been on plenty of, maybe they're not like virtual events, but even just like being on Zoom calls where you're not engaged, it's very easy to kind of like not pay attention, not be engaged, and you won't get any of the benefit of, you know, what you're after if people are kind of like aloof and not even watching and not paying attention. But if you have that kind of really captivating experience, then it totally, you know, changes it. You can almost feel like you're in person with those people, like you're really in it, versus like, oh, I'm checking my phone, I'm looking at another window, I'm, you know, answering emails. Have you thought about things like trying to lock people into the screen while they're like in the experience to keep them focused, or is that outside?
I don't think we've thought of that, because I think that
the content's so good, you don't need it.
Yeah. That's kind of the vision, is like, the goal is to have an experience or event so good, you don't want to multitask. Like you don't want to check your email. And people write that in the testimonials. They're like, we got like an hour to completely disconnect. We were having such a good time. We didn't check our emails. We didn't check the Slack. Like that's what we want. We want people to disconnect from their work for like, I say a minute, but you know, usually it's an hour, and have like a good moment with like a meaningful moment with their colleagues.
What's like a story that stands out from the pandemic, from like, you know, one of these experiences for a customer that was maybe the most impactful, the one that maybe your team was just so excited kind of learning about?
Ooh, that's tough.
And also, what was the biggest flop? I'm curious, the biggest flop from a content perspective.
I'll tell you, I think something that would be interesting for the listeners that is relevant for today. And then I can also probably share a big flop. So in the beginning of the pandemic, we were selling these virtual events, and these companies that were in person and now they were virtual started to invite their remote employees, because they're like, oh, we now have these virtual events. We now have an opportunity to invite everyone within the company to these experiences alongside like the warehouse workers. And they invited everyone, the event finishes, we jump on a call and they're like, none of these remote workers showed up. It's very odd. And we did another one and none of these event remote workers showed up. So we hopped on a call with some of these remote workers and we said, hey, you know, did you know that there was a virtual event? Yes. Did you get and see the invitation? Yes. Why didn't you show up to these experiences? And they're like, well, we were never invited to these experiences prior to the pandemic. They never like made an announcement, hey, now you're part of the team, like you're now invited to these virtual experiences. Like there wasn't like a communication. They're like, we never felt like we were actually part of the company. All of a sudden we got these random invitations to these team building events, which we never got in the past. And so we thought that it was a mistake. We thought like we weren't actually invited. And I see this now becoming kind of like a similar issue in today's world, where we're going back to in-person, we're doing this like hybrid component, many of these organizations. And a lot of them can cause complexities because we're not being sensitive to some of the dynamics that fold around. So like yesterday I spoke with a founder in Miami and he said like the Miami team loves to come to the office. The energies are really great in Miami, but the New York team is jealous of the Miami team because they're not going to the office. They don't have that same energy. And it's kind of hard because the founders live in Miami. And so the founders are giving all this really cool energy to the Miami team. And the New York team is kind of like the kids that are like, I want attention and I'm not getting it, right? And so we're starting to create the same mistakes where these other remote employees are starting to feel like these second class citizens. And if you don't have good cultural leaders within those other time zones or this other cities, you're going to start to see those offices disconnect from one another and not be as strong. So I think that's like a cool story that also pertains to today. I mean, in terms of the biggest flop, I think, you know, what's funny is their Halloween always brings out really weird things out of people.
You start to really like understand people on a deeper level.
Yeah. And we're in the business of working with other people. It's a hospitality industry, all things considered. And if you've ever worked in the hospitality world, you will come across all different types of people. And you're like, whoa, there's a lot of unique souls on this planet. And, you know, we're here to please also our customers. And one of the customers in the middle of this trivia event was like, everyone, stop what you're doing. And she's like, she was the organizer. So the host is like, okay, what's going to happen? She's like, I want everyone to stop playing the trivia. I want everyone to watch me dance. So she does, she has this like wig on. And she like dances in front of the Zoom and she grabs this like fake bucket of blood and she dumps it on her head and she like comes deep into the Zoom and everyone is like, what the hell is going on here? And, you know, sometimes we're like, okay, and back to like, trivia.
Day to day, she's like all buttoned up. She doesn't say anything. She's clean, you know.
So we get a lot of unique personalities, but
wow, fun. Well, you get some interesting stories for sure.
We have a lot of really great Slack channels, and one of them is hilarious customer communications, and
that should become like your content. If they sign off on it, you can do some marketing campaigns around it.
Totally. We once had this really fun, we used to send out really quirky prizes. And like now we have gift cards and we're working back to go back to the prizes, but we do so many events and it becomes really logistically complicated to send all kinds of really quirky gifts to these, you know, people. And one of the things that we used to send is these burrito blankets. And this guy was like following up to say like, I'm so excited for my burrito blanket. And he put himself like in the burrito blanket while eating a burrito with a burrito Zoom background. And he sent us this photo of him and he's like, I've fulfilled my vision of being a burrito. And we're like, we're so happy for you right now.
Oh my gosh. these become these memories, you know, that people can draw back on and be like, oh, I remember when XYZ, when, and again, if you're in this fully remote environment, you don't have many of those kinds of moments to look back on, you know?
Totally. Yeah.
So if you think about, you know, the economy kind of shifting a little bit over the last, you know, 6 months, obviously there's lots of fear and uncertainty. There's been tech layoffs and all the stuff, but you know, there was also a Lattice report that came out the other day that said, you know, the number one priority for HR teams is employee engagement. You know, still, you know, they want to make sure that, you know, they're retaining the talent that is still at the company, that they are continue to be excited and motivated to be there. You know, how do you see Confetti kind of playing into like this economy?
Yeah. It's pretty interesting because we're also thinking about that in a different way. And I have a few responses for it. I'll share a quick story that we had internally where our one of our employees, his wife worked at a company that just had a very severe layoff. And they found out that their internal events team went from like seven people to like one or two. And he was like, I know that this might sound like bad news because our ICP just shrank to from 7 people to, you know, 2 people. But these people are now going to have an additional pressure to put together all these different types of events, and they're going to need to be able to scale, and they will need to use a platform like Confetti to help them truly scale all these bookings. And I think he's right. And I think that there's ultimately a few different ways to see it. But if you're going to lay off your team, and you're like, hey, you guys are the ones that are, I've chosen you to stay, you really need to get them re-engaged and excited about what the future looks like. Otherwise, you're going to really battle low morale. And you need to get the vibes up. Now, it's not appropriate to lay people off and throw a party. So there needs to be some tact with that, whether you're like, we're going to do a mindful leadership experience, which is something that we offer. Hey, we want to do like end the week in a sound bath to just reflect on our thoughts, our feelings, what overcame us this week. So there has to be some kind of balance. But once you're ready, we want to connect everybody in a way that re-engages the team that's left. Virtual events specifically are extraordinarily affordable. So if you're going to cut out a budget, you're going to cut out the offsites that are extremely expensive. Business travel usually gets hit quite a lot. And if everyone is in their own location, city, whatever, how do you get them together? And you can very affordably get them together with a virtual event. We have experiences ranging from starting at $7 per person. So really any company in the world, it's basically a cup of coffee, could afford an experience that we sell. And yeah, it's just that morale, team building, culture is no longer this like nice to have thing. It's something that needs to be a part of every organization during good times or bad times, and it needs to be done regularly.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting is, you know, from the sounds of it, the content that you have is not just like this light, airy kind of, you know, whimsical stuff. Obviously that's part of it, but there's also some more kind of deliberate, thoughtful, intentional programming that kind of gets a certain outcome where, because I think a lot of people, their first thoughts sometimes with like virtual events is like, oh, it's like some, you know, funny light thing, and it's not really like impactful and people don't really want to participate. But, you know, it sounds like you all have been a lot more thoughtful about, okay, like we have much more purposeful content that's going to help companies achieve a certain outcome that they're, you know, in whatever the stage of the company or what they're trying to achieve, we probably have something that fits what they're looking for, right?
Most definitely. Yeah.
Yep. Makes sense. And then, you know, more from a company building standpoint, like you guys internally, you know, a lot of public companies have said, hey, we don't know what the future looks like. We're not going to like even issue guidance on our revenue and earnings and stuff like that. Like, how do you even think about like planning for the next 6-12 months in kind of a murky environment? Is it hard? Do you do a lot of financial modeling? Are you a financially driven kind of organization? Is it, you know, how do you think about the next like year?
Yeah. So I'm a little bit more old school when it comes to the financials. I remember my first chats with you, Michael, like we were more of the kind of bootstrappy, I know now I feel like a wrong saying, cause you're properly bootstrapped and we are,
we're capital efficient, all of us.
Okay, there we go. Yeah. We're capital efficient. Yeah. And I think that the founders that are not willing to do annual plannings. Like I also spoke about this in another founders dinner that I was yesterday. I think that's not the right route to go. I mean, you should have investors and partners that understand the environment that you're in, understand that there will be agility, understand that things aren't going to look exact or like end up being exactly as you had planned for, but to put a plan for a year and say, hey, this is what we think this company looks like right now, I think is healthy. To track that over, you know, by week, by month, by quarter, and say, are we close to where we're planning or are we way off, is also healthy. And adjusting that financial model, the plans, whatever, I think it's really about thoughtful execution on where you're investing your dollars right now, making sure that you're doing things with thought. And I think just a lot of 2021, mistakes were made without much thought. There was a lot of capital that was being thrown on these founders, a lot of pressure to grow really hard without this there wasn't even the feeling that consequences was something that was possible. Everyone felt like unstoppable. And I think that this is just a healthy correction. So like we're going to, founders are going to need to like learn how to manage their business properly.
I think when capital is almost like free in the sense that like interest rates are so low and there's so much abundance of capital, then there's not a lot of risk to like burning it. You know, it's like, oh, like let people just kind of do crazy pie in the sky things. If it turns into something great, if not, whatever, we just lost a bunch of money, but we'll make it up somewhere else. And that kind of seems to have been the mentality. But obviously when the world shifts, people need to change. And I think it's going to be hard for some people to get out of that mentality and recalibrate to the realities of, you know, what the world looks like now. Cause you know, not to get too deep into it, but you have a lot of people that raise lots of money like 12 months ago, 18 months ago, they're going to start hitting a time over these next 6 to 12 months where, you know, the money they're going to have to go out and, you know, potentially raise again. It might be a different situation than they've ever had to kind of encounter before. So it'll be interesting to see the companies that can shift their mentality quick enough to continue to thrive. And then, you know, as you think of yourself as a leader and a manager, you know, going into the pandemic and being, okay, our whole business might go to zero. Now we have to shift, or going into kind of a recessionary environment and we have to like change the strategy a little bit. How do you think about like communicating and being a leader to the team? Is that typically you, or are you typically the one kind of taking front and center, like the one kind of setting the tone, and what helped you get through the pandemic and what's going to help you just continue to thrive now?
Yeah. It's a good question. I'm doing the communications, for these things. I love doing the communications for these parts of the business. I think that I do things in a, I'm not sure. I've never been to, you know, a handful of different founders, all hands or town halls. But when I, at my town halls, I mean, usually at least 50% of my portion and talks about culture and like what we need to do to improve culture and anything that's related to being transparent and bridging any gaps between what it is that I know and what is that they know, and making them feel comfortable, excited, and understanding. And, you know, the message for my team in 2023, as we start putting the plans together and showing it to them, is like, look, there is uncertainty with this year, and we're going to have to work really, really hard. We're going to need to reinvent ourselves maybe again. You know, currently Q4 is coming out to be numbers that we're proud of, but we need to be aware that as Q1 or Q2 rolls around, maybe luck won't be on our side, and we need to have a game plan ready for what does a company look like if people aren't booking virtual events as we're expecting. What are the marketing channels? What are we going to sell? How are we going to sell it? Who are we going to sell it to? These things need to be fleshed out. And sharing with them, like, this is what needs to happen, and doing it as transparently as possible, I think is definitely like the route to go. Is people really crave that transparency and makes them feel safer. There's trust, there's more engagement. And they understand like we have a goal to hit as a company. What do we need to do to hit it?
Are you the type to hold back any punches, or you'll keep it very real with people? Like, hey, this is the expectations. This is the reality.
I'm more along the lines of like, I will share the ugly truth. However, you know, there was a moment over the past few months that I was worried that maybe we wouldn't finish our Series A. And I really thought to myself, like, what does the team look like if that doesn't happen? And some of those thoughts really worried me. And I do think that there's a lot more learning and exploring that all of us need to do as a community, both employees and founders, because if you go to your employees and say, hey, look, I want to just be real with you. Like, there's a chance that we're going to do layoffs in 3 months from now. Everyone is going to freak out. Most likely. I think that's what's going to happen. People are going to start being really scared. And you don't want to scare them preemptively, but you don't want to surprise them with a layoff. So like, what is the right way? Like, do you tell them, guys, this is the war zone. We need to all work our butts off to keep our jobs, to be successful, to support each other and the company and the future of what it is that we're building here. And yeah, sorry, the reality, the life looks a little scary. Or do you protect them and say, you know what, let me protect them from any bad news, and let me only come to them once I know that things are actually messed up. And I can tell you that I have it in my plans to go to my team and say, I need you to help me solve this in a time where we don't need it. Because in a time where we do need it, I want to know, what do the people genuinely want? Like, what do you want? Do you want us to hide it from you? Do you want us to tell you the truth? And I don't know. Do you have any ideas? What do you think the people want?
It's hard. I don't know. I mean, you want to be able to keep the team focused on the task at hand. So you don't want to give unnecessary, you know, worry to where they're not able to actually, because that's the time you need them the most. It's like, hey, we got to stay on track. We got to accomplish these things. But at the same time, you also need to make sure that people are all aware that there's a sense of urgency and things have to happen and change, and there needs to be impact. And, you know, what I've seen too is, you know, if you can get that balance right, sure, there's going to be some people that get freaked out, but also kind of the cream rises to the top and some people will step up and be like, I've got it. You know, I love the company. I love you guys. I'm ready to do whatever it takes. And like, let's roll up our sleeves and do this. And then other people are going to flake out. And, you know, you also recognize, okay, who are the ride or die people and who are the people that are just here because it's like a fun company and it's cool. And I think, you know, Swag Up, we had a lot of the people that joined because it was like the fun, interesting, sexy company versus like, hey, when shit hits the fan, like it's actually really hard and work has to be done and there's expectations. And so, you know, we've had to over the last year think about that balance and what we're going to share and what expectations we're going to set. And, you know, political polarization aside, you know, Elon Musk is doing this right now at Twitter where he's saying, guys, you know, the steady state is bankruptcy for Twitter. We're losing $1 billion a year. You know, and I need people that are going to stay here, and maybe it's too much, but like work 18 hours a day and I'm sleeping on the floor and you need to be sleeping on the floor. But at least he's being clear and upfront and saying, hey, this is what my expectation is here going forward. And this is the stakes. And maybe it's a bit of a ploy, but, you know, I think that's the extreme case. And sometimes it can work really well if you can then live that culture out going forward. But it's a tricky balance. Have you all, you know, last couple of questions, have you all change the way that you know spend on different things and make investments, or has it kind of been the same as before?
Yeah, we started a hiring freeze, I feel like quite a while ago, more or less like I'm gonna say like 6-8 months ago, we started like a hiring freeze. We brought a few people that we really needed, but
opportunistic.
I wouldn't even call it opportunistic. I would say like it was people that we were like very calculated. Like for us, we know a certain amount of customers equals a certain amount of customer success people, and we got to a point where we needed
like the marginal hires, the ones that are volume based.
Exactly. We're like, we need two more of these people in order to sustain ourselves, to sustain the business that we were expecting for Q4. Other than that, we didn't make any hires. Now with the new round of capital, we do plan on hiring more people. I think though it's going to be very thoughtful, and I think we're going to say to ourselves, okay, who are the 3-5 most important people that we really need over the course of the next, you know, quarter? Let's taste what this next quarter feels like. And have people that are actually coming from these big companies with a lot of experience. So, I want to get very quality hires that, you know, are leaving the Metas, the Twitters of the world and want to join a company like Confetti. And that can actually teach us something. So they're going to be hopefully exponentially significant to the progress of the business. But I feel like my business is also pretty unique in the sense that like my team's first of all, just amazing. And I really have, I'm so proud of them for everything that they've accomplished. I'm have the luxury of not dealing with any of the day-to-day elements of the business. And
just in time for Thanksgiving, you know, you could tell them all how thankful you are.
For sure. So not having to deal with any of the day-to-day parts of the business, and or not any, but like being a supporter for them. But they always give me the opportunity to look at the future and what does the future look like, and lets me work on special projects while they're dealing with the day-to-day. And if you don't have that, then you need to bring the key figures in the company to run the day-to-day. So you as the CEO can really focus on what does the future look like. And I think in 2023, it's more important than ever to really ask yourself, okay, what does the future look like?
I think there's a lot of like opportunity to be, on the offensive if you do have the capital or something to, you know, in an environment like this, because like you said, there's great talent that's on the market. There's even potentially, you know, competitors or synergistic businesses that you can, you know, acquire or partner with in an interesting way that maybe wasn't possible before because everyone thought their company was worth hundreds of millions of dollars or something. So I think being able to strike that balance of like, let's be conservative and realistic about the environment, but also if we, you know, execute well, this is actually an opportunity to really continue to pull ahead and build the business that we want to build. So last question for you. So for the founders and, you know, operators listening that maybe they're in a position that maybe you might have been, you know, 3 months ago, or maybe we were in 6 months ago, where the future's uncertain. You know, maybe cash balances are running low or something, and their back's against the wall. Maybe they're even like, "Do I even want to do this anymore? I don't even feel like running this business." Like, what would your advice be for somebody in that kind of position right now?
Well, I would first want them to know that you're not alone. So I think that it's really important for founders to not feel like they're the only ones that feel like that. Like I felt like that. I know a multitude of founders that feel like that as well. And first of all, reach out, get help from other founders, get a support, get a community of people that can remind you about how amazing you are, can help strategize on, okay, you know, maybe hard things like layoffs do need to happen, but what does next look like? And you know, also what do you need to be happy? Because at the end of the day, if we do only live once, then you want to make sure that there's that right balance of still being healthy and still being happy through this crazy, crazy, crazy journey.
I do find that a lot of people like shut out their physical wellness a lot. So obviously mental, of course, but you know, they stop working out, they don't go for the run, they don't stretch. Like these things really can be very bad for your mind when you're not moving around and not being active. And I think that's always been really helpful for me. Like, let me go for a run. Like, I'm going to think so much clearer, like so much more clearly after that, like do those types of things. I think people sacrifice a lot.
Yeah, for sure. After the seed extension, I told myself, like, Lee, you really need to get your physical fitness and physical health in check, that by the time that you go to the Series A, like you are working out regularly and it's part of your habit. And this time when I was raising that round, I actually like lived up to my word. I created the habit ahead of time. So when I went out to fundraise, working out was part of my routine 3 to 5 times a week. But this time I was like, oh crap, like you need to make sure next time you're meditating daily, because my mental health was suffering this time around. So my physical fitness was actually pretty good, but my mental health was still not as strong as I would like it to be. So that was that's the next big learning for the Series B, is like, all right, make sure I'm meditating daily and it's part of
meditation's very hard for me. I'm like too antsy for that. I have to really practice. I think once you can get control of your mind though, it's a huge, powerful, you know, characteristic. It's just very hard to get into it to begin with, I think.
Yeah. So most definitely.
Awesome. Well, this was super fun. Very, very real, practical, you know, real world founder type of stories and advice. I think people are going to love it. And thanks for coming on.
Yeah. Likewise, Michael. Thanks so much for having me. And hope the listeners enjoyed what we talked about today.
Yep. And hopefully they book a confetti for their team. It's better. No better time than now to do it. So
withconfetti.com for anyone that's interested. And obviously I have well taken care of from the Swag Up team.
Yep, for sure. Awesome. Thanks, Lee.
Bye. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to the Out of the Woods podcast. Don't forget to subscribe if you haven't already. More episodes are on the way. If you want to keep the conversation going, suggest questions, or nominate guests for future episodes, You can reach me on Twitter at Michael Martocci. Good luck and see you next time.